Okay, so good morning, everyone. We have now started with dispatching in the lecture, and as the short quiz that I had there was so very popular, I thought it would be a good idea to repeat the same thing, just with fresh surprises from the world of dispatching. So, here we go. Actually, thinking of... Let's try that out. We have a pretty similar environment as the one from the lecture, so there's not too much to change about that. But we have new expressions, first of all. So let's talk about those. Statements like this. We have B created, being referred to as an A. And then we have an expression like this one. What's going to happen? Yes.
So the compiler sees that A is of class A, and so the searches for a method and one taking an argument of class B in class A. It only finds the one taking A as an argument, but as B is a subclass of A, it chooses the method M1 of A.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
And then comes then at runtime, the virtual machine sees that A is of type B and searches for a method with a matching signature in B, but does not find any one because there's no M1 of A in B. So the output is M1.
Correct. So, static types A and B for the call expression, locating an appropriate signature to dispatch to results in the one that's in the blue frame, which will lead to the first parameter having static type of A. Then for the runtime part, we try to locate such a thing starting from B and don't find an exact match. So this one here is not a valid candidate because of B, so this one is not used for that. Instead, we remain in class A and get M1 A in A. Very well. So the kind of new thing here compared to the part that we've seen in the lecture was all in all just the idea of how to interpret the cast operation, the cast expression. And what you can take away from that is that cast expression performs a type conversion in the compile time type, in the sense of that the static type is changed with that. So it doesn't have any influence on runtime types, it's just a static thing in there. Good. So we have to incorporate that into the first phase of our dispatching algorithm. So let's move on to... maybe like that. So... the next one. I've got a lot more confusion with casting going on. Now we cast the first occurrence of A and not the second, so we get the cost to be over here. Anyone wants to try? Even if you don't know the answer yet, you can kind of try to live decipher what's actually happening there. Maybe you want to start? Yeah?
I think that's N won't A in A again, because it casts A to B and searches a B for a method which is applicable to the argument A, which is of static type A.
So static types is B for a receiver, A for parameter.
Mm-hmm. And there is no method for argument A in class D, and therefore it takes the one and superclass.
So in the static search part, we now start from this one, exactly, but as we can't find something that matches type A, although we have a runtime type B in there, but it's static types now, we have to go look elsewhere in the chain, which is here, and we locate this one, and by the same reasoning as before, the runtime doesn't change anything. We still have marked this one as the signature to which to dispatch to. So that's not overwritten by anything in class B, so that remains M1A in A. Good. Next one. Now both are casted. Does that change anything? You can kind of see it in the same flow as we've done before. So the first part would always be to annotate the static types of the parameters as you have found them, because that will help you in doing the search for the static dispatch signature. So we will start looking for a method with parameter of compile time type B, and this time we start in class B. So let's go to B and go looking for M1 of type B, this one over here. Okay, so that's the dispatch candidate, in the sense of that will be the signature for which to look out for. And in the runtime part, we start searching, looking. Starting at the runtime type, which is also B, so we start again here and look for signature M1B and locate that one also. So that's what we're going to get. M1B and B. Okay, so it's going to get even smaller. Changes are now. Let me look at the situation where we have a new B. We store it in reference of static type B. So static type will be B. Parameters are not existent. So for in search for a candidate to dispatch to, start at B because of the static type here. There is no M1 here, so we go over to A, look there for M1, and we find it here. So, done with that. But now we have a body to take care of, so there's also a call. And now it's again a question of annotating the static types as runtime, well, just won't find any M1 thing over here, so there's no M1, so we will also choose this one. Okay, so now static types for that one. It's implicitly this, so the receiver is of type A, parameter, static type B. So let's have a look for M1 in A for a B, and that's once again pretty similar to this one over here. It's actually the same case that we're going to run into, and for that we have found there is no thing with an exact type B as parameter, but we have a super type A. So for this one we will locate, so for that one we will locate this candidate. And then we go in the dynamic part, we go looking into B, have a search for M1 of, with the parameter A, don't find anything, so we dispatch to this one. So, for this one, same situation, we have B, static type B, and a call to M2. Well, there's not so much you can do about the first part, so that is B. B doesn't have any M2, so we find that that is the static target. It's not overwritten in B, so B is not checked. Instead, check for one, that is this one. So that is the easy part. Now, A as the static type for this, and this is also A, the parameter. So we have A dot M2 of parameter of type A. So is there something like that? We have to, well, that is still remaining from the last thing. So we have to look in A for signature M2 of A. Go to A, look for M2 of A, and we find an exact match. So that is the signature to look out for. Then there's the runtime part. For that we need to know what the runtime type of this is, and it's actually B. So we start at B with searching. Now, what can we do there? We have to find an exact match for M2A, and we actually find it. So, wow, there's actual overwriting in there. Six. what happens here is we change the static type of B. Apart from that, it's exactly the same. And well, that just changes things that are for our first dispatching. And well, in that case, we have type A here. I have to go looking for M2. Well, that's gonna dispatch to the same signature as before. We have the same runtime type as before, so we will once again find ourselves here. That's still the same signature over here, and the same runtime type from before. So it's runtime type B. Thus, it's exactly the same thing as before. So nothing changes. Just fiddling with the static type of this one here will just don't change anything. Just not change anything. So that is M2 A. Good. Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Still okay. So, now we have a more complicated expression here. There's A has static type A, and the first parameter has static type B. Good. Let's go looking for a dispatching candidate. We have to check A for an M3 with a B. Okay, so that is this one over here. So that is the thing that we are going to look for. Now let's move on to the runtime part. For that, there's the runtime type of the receiver, the one that's interesting. So we will find that that is of runtime type B. So we start our search in B. We go looking for M3 of B. So we will locate this one as being the exact signature as the one that we have located in the static part. So this will gonna be our candidate to, well, not the candidate, but the one that's gonna be dispatched to at runtime. And yeah. Now we have to deal with the expression that we find in here. So once again, first part, providing static types. What's the static type of this one here? Well, you can read that directly from here. So, well, maybe let's. So. That's the source for the static type of B. So let's annotate that here. And what's the static type of super?
A.
So there's not too much magic going on there. It's just A. Doesn't change the dynamic type though. So, well, not well. That doesn't. The dynamic thing doesn't matter here. So, let's have a look for M1 of B in here. So here we have to locate M1 B. Don't find anything like that. Instead, this one here. And with that, the runtime part has to go out looking for for an M1 of A in B, doesn't find anything like that. So we have to go over here, and here we find this one. So that's once again M1 A So, yeah, that's what super gives you here. Good. Is there need for another go at something like this? Or do you feel comfortable with overwriting, overloading, dispatching, and all that? Who wants to continue with such a thing? So you're bored to death with these single dispatching things? Well, I'll give you the solution anyway on the sheet afterwards, so you can do those things at home. Just keep in mind how you do that. You determine the static types of receiver and parameter. Look for the signature that you're going to dispatch to, and then do the do a similar thing for the runtime, in the sense that you need to determine the runtime type of the receiver and start looking for the signature that you have located one step before for an exact match of that signature, starting from this dynamic receiver type and go backwards the chain. So with that you should be fine with everything. Good. So, with that you should be able to solve that. In case there is something that you find scary or didn't expect to be in the assignment 6.2, you can still come and ask, I would say. But apart from that, I think I only put that on there to give you one more chance to have kind of a fresh environment to just give you a chance to train once more and to actually see whether you can solve that by yourself or not. Good. So, the next thing, I think we can enlarge it a little bit more. So now we have left the field of single dispatching and instead find ourselves in this multiple dispatch version of this case Java. You remember that was the thing that we introduced in the last few slides of the last lecture. So what we got from there was that we introduced something like this, where we have methods that for which you can specify the static type on which would yield the candidate to dispatch to, and the actual runtime type to which to dispatch. So this would handle dynamic type of A for a dispatch on a base. The green one would handle also dispatches based on the static type base, but would handle the runtime type of B. Okay, now with that out of the way, let's have a look at a certain situation. We have the situation like here, where we have a common interface base, an interface A and an interface B, and both of them are extending the base. Does the example that we see here make sense? Proposal is that there's something out there that is a class C which implements A comma B like that. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the corner case in that situation. So if you remember when we talked about what the implications of multiple dispatching is you buy yourself into a whole new class of ambiguities, and especially for if you have multiple inheritance, which you have in Java. If you resort to these interfaces, then you can construct things like a call to this M with a thing of that type C, and although you can kind of cast it to something like to something like a base, and call it like that. The principle, the first phase would work. You would still have a static type of base for C, so you would locate, try to locate a the static signature for that call. That would be M with parameter base, which would still be quite fine for that part of the algorithm. But then at runtime, you would have to dispatch to either an A or a B. However, you're inheriting from both of them, so with that you get you would buy yourself into a whole new class of runtime exceptions, because you just can't figure out where to dispatch to, and that's something that you can't get so easily with standard Java, as there's just nothing like this dispatching based on the parameters. So, yeah, that's something that if you introduce such a multi-dispatching system, you have to decide whether you either disallow interfaces as specializes here, or whether you want to live with new runtime exceptions that look kind of random. So, yeah, that's what you get yourself into with that. So that is the first aspect of the of this thing. Then another issue to look out for if you have something like multiple dispatching is, well, take a look at the example over here. And once again, it's about what are the implications of that? Are there any corner cases? What are the problems that you buy yourself into? That's also one thing that I quickly huddled over in the lecture and just didn't mention too much about, but that's now a concrete example of something that might go wrong. Okay.
And if you compare an object of type JPEG with an object of type GIF, does it compile and then get runtime?
Yeah, that's the question of how you would realize such a system. So the problem is that, as you have said, if you compare objects from different types, you won't have an in that implementation you don't have a version of picture for the GIF within the JPEG, and the same goes for here because there's this abstract base class, which in principle would be the responsible site where to specify the code that that's meaningful for the base class. But in languages where we can specify something like an abstract class, you don't require it to provide an implementation for something like that. And if you get the situation where you have to dispatch to the base type, or some type that you haven't specified a specialized version for, you would have to resort to the base type. So either you disallow abstract extract base methods as possible dispatch targets, or you require the children, the extended versions of this abstract thing, to also provide such a base method. Otherwise, you run into exactly the problem that you have mentioned there. So that's also this design aspect in this, which makes the whole experience of having this multiple dispatch a little bit more complicated as it may have looked in the slides. So you're going to run into these problems probably pretty soon if you start working with that. And that's what we're going to do next. We will have a look at multiple dispatching in practice. These are just to kind of warm you up and make you aware of why you have to react to certain compilation errors or runtime errors. So, okay, download the multi-Java system from there. So hopefully my internet works this time. Multijava.sn. Is it really too many laptops in the room?
Not here.
Yeah, you can see my screen, but it's trying to actually connect. Yeah, it seems not off. Yeah, so let's have a look whether I have that somewhere in my repositories. Also, yeah. The astonishing thing is that in the morning it connected quite fine, so I don't know whether that's depending on the number of laptops that are in the room or something. Okay. Is there anyone here with internet who happens to have a USB key or something? I think there is a jar file for the multi-java from the download page. It's time to move into the new room, I would say. But apart from that, maybe we can use the time for talking about this thing over here. Yeah, so counting here is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 people. So it seems that there's a potential for 14 people if we move to 10 o'clock. The thing is, I have had a little bit of a bad feedback about moving to 10 o'clock from a few people from in here. How many are there? It's 5 people who can't do the 10 o'clock. Oh, I hate these things. The thing is that with these kind of doodles, you will always get a lot of feedback for certain dates, and it's questionable whether the people will really show up. So I'm a little bit unsure about whether that is a good idea to move there. But one thing maybe next. Thank you. One thing maybe is that next week I won't be here on Thursday and Friday anyway, so thank you. Next week we'll have no tutorial anyway. Also, we didn't have a lecture on Wednesday, so yeah, there's nothing to do a tutorial on. But then there's the last week of the year. I think it's 23rd of, yeah. Well, we can try for the 10 o'clock appointment on the 23rd. We'll see how many people turn up. But yeah. We can try it out and see whether the numbers are really higher than in there, and only then I would say we will commit to that thing. Is that an offer? Apart from that, you will have the recordings, and for you, I would say if you have concrete questions, so don't hesitate to just contact me, drop in my office, and just bother me with questions all you like. I think you've earned that with coming for the early date for most of the semester by now. Okay, so thanks very much for the jar. It's kind of my fallback internet here. And yeah, maybe we can now start with this thing. So there should be, yeah. really. Doesn't look like it has worked, has it? Is it the one from the It has the right size. Oh, very nice. I mean, I can program the things. I can't just. The only thing is, I can't show you the results now. But yeah, if that's okay with you, we can do that. So, thank you anyway. Well, the test your multi-Java compiler with natural numbers thing is probably pretty redundant anyway, because you find the source codes of that thing in the lecture anyway. So that's nothing new. It's just trying to get to run the multi-Java anyway. So, oh no, it's not. Here, where did I want to go? Übungen 15, exercise dispatching. Okay, so what you would have gotten out of that was the natural numbers thing. I think I stored it in there. So that would have looked like this. And yeah, you maybe find a few similarities to the things that you had on the slides. For once, there's this equals thing. So that is the same, or, well, kind of a similar implementation as the one from the slides. It's just instrumented with another line that should illustrate that this one has actually been called. And most surprisingly would have been the thing that you can't just specify the natural number thing like this in the implementation that we have here, but instead you would run into the problems that we have seen here if you would try to compile that. The question would be what to do with the dispatchings that are not the specialized version. We also have to provide a version for the unspecialized thing. So we also have to come up with an object implementation of this thing. Otherwise, it just won't compile for reasons that we have discussed about a little bit earlier. So we need to also provide a fallback solution for the case where we don't dispatch to our specialized version of the equals method. So that would have been kind of the message for that thing. And we've discussed about why you have to do that a little bit earlier. The next thing is, I think, a more lengthy thing. There's still the Java P version. Well, you can disassemble your class files with this Java P tool and get a file that gives you the bytecode things. And that is, well, kind of was the idea of trying to reverse engineer the things that we get out of that, pretty similar to the little fraction of code that we have seen in the lecture already. And yeah, that's the live output that you get from that, and without any annotations. This would have given you the chance to see that there's the equals implementation for the natural type, there's the equals implementation for the object type. So these are the two versions that we have provided. And the equals, which is actually called equals, which is the static dispatched candidate, would take the role of the dispatcher in that case and perform the check for the class for the type of the parameter, and either fork to implementation body 3 with index 0 or body 3 with index 1, which would correspond to our thing. So that is just, yeah, to get a grip on disassembling and yeah, trying to reverse engineer what's actually happening. So that's that. For a little bit more of creativity, let's have a look at what the next thing is. It says familiarize with yourself with the visitor pattern. Who of you in here does not know how the visitor pattern works? Actually, quite a lot. So that was maybe more meaningful than I would have expected. Okay, so the thing is that the visitor pattern, at least in the way that we use it here, can be used as kind of a substitute for multiple dispatching, in the sense that you you try to make use of the fact that for the receiver you actually have something like virtual dispatch in language like Java. So what you do in the visitor pattern here is that you write certain instrumentation into your classes that will take the parameter and then once again perform another call based on the parameter, as the parameter itself can then dispatch to the right callback method that it needs. And that is something that you can see working in the example that I've given you here. So what we see here is one of the usual examples that you get in compiler construction, that is an expression tree made up from an abstract base class, XP or expression, and there's certain classes derived from that, the const class, the binary expression class, and maybe also concrete versions of the binary expression class like the sum or the product or something. And the thing is, now with something like that you can build up a data structure that represents a concrete expression. You might need that in order to transform your expression according to some arithmetic rules, or you might want to evaluate that expression based on certain variables for which you give a binding afterwards. Or there's a lot of uses for something like that, especially in compiler construction, as these expression trees are also part of syntax trees that are going to be created from a parser and then set up in memory, and then you get such a data structure from that. So it's a tree that uses virtual base class and then concrete classes that are, well, then varying between branches and and leaves of that tree. So the thing is, now you want to have something that that lets you specify callbacks during a run through the whole tree in order to perform certain modifications to such a tree. The way that this is done in many cases is that you once specify a depth first search on the tree and implement implement interfaces for callbacks and certain events during the depth first search, in the sense that before you start descending into a subtree, you trigger a callback, and in case you return after you have visited all the nodes within this subtree, you trigger another callback. And the way to do that would be by implementing such a depth-first search with the help of these, this visitor. And yeah, how you would do that is you would perform the actual depth-first search with this accept thing, which would accept as one of these visitors, which is the facility where to actually store the callbacks for the depth-first search. So the eval visitor is the place where the callbacks are actually found. The accept thing is on the expression, first of all, abstract, but within the concrete instances of that thing, they're going to be implemented. So we find an accept for the constant, which is a leaf in our expression tree, that will just perform one of these so-called visitation methods, so this visit on the eval visitor. Yeah, in the binary expression it does, well, the binary expression is probably not such... okay, it's implemented in that way here. Okay, we can also live with that. So it, the only thing that this accept does is it calls the callbacks the visit methods in there with a parameter over here. And you see, the thing is that's happening here is that here within this body here, we now have the static type of the method in question of this const as the static type for this one, which will lead to the visit method with parameter of type const being the dispatch target during the first phase of our dispatching algorithm. That is the way that our dispatch in the end will actually reach the relevant callback afterwards, because if we would have done that any other way, we would only have gotten that we have had our depth first run on a general or exp type thing, and with that we cannot call a callback method that is somehow specialized. So in the visitor, what we will do is we will, in case we hit something like the const, we will perform a constant specific action, which is just in this case returning the constant value for the sum. We will have implicitly implemented the depth first search by calling the accept on the left part and then calling the accept on the right part with the same visitor as before as parameter. So we give the accept the visitor as a parameter, and in there it the expression will call back the visitor with itself as parameter, but in this time statically determined, so that it will fork to the relevant callback method. Same is for the product. We just perform the product specific method on the thing that we get from that first search on the left and on the right. And with that, we get depth first search through the tree while evaluating the expressions, and in the end, come up with the resulting thing. So we can do things like that. We have we can now build up expressions. Well, that is manually a built up expression for what is it? It's a sum between 2 and 5. We multiply that with 3 and add that to 1 in that case. And we can evaluate something like this with the visitor, which is this one, which is a quite nice way of compactly specifying, well, nice, what is the alternative? You can have a recursive function on the extents and distribute all your things on the all over the class collection here. So although that this might break the concept that you don't grab into the insides of a certain object, you still have everything that that is connected with one aspect in one place. In this case, the evaluation visitor, but yeah, that's one of the visitors. So that is what these visitors are all about. Now the thing is, implement an expression evaluation visitor in MultiJava, of course, with exploiting the new techniques from MultiJava. So programming that with the features from MultiJava means that there must be some way of how to bring the novelty of MultiJava in there. So multiple dispatching would be the thing to bring into that. So let's have a look at how something like that actually looks like. So remember before we had all these auxiliary methods, these accepts and visits and all that. Now what we have is we still have the evaluation visitor with visit methods, but now the visit methods are specified in MultiJava way, in the sense that they do dynamic dispatch. So the evaluation visitor is something that you can call on any expression and it will just branch to the respective concrete class, and the accept methods are completely gone from the expression classes. You don't need that anymore, because this trick with getting the visitor and calling the relevant method with this as a parameter at the place where we actually know what concrete type this has doesn't need to be there anymore, because we have this multiple dispatch feature which does exactly that for us. So we can use the exactly same way to specify that as before. The only thing is that we can get rid of a whole lot of instrumentation functions and can directly use the visit methods in here with their respective specializers. So that is kind of the if you are in a situation where you need these visitors. That is actually just a workaround for the feature that something like multiple dispatching gives you. You can have kind of a similar code, but just without a lot of workarounds by using a language that actually has something like multiple dispatching. So that would be kind of the gist of nothing. Of course, if you don't have not encountered too many visitor structures or situations where you need something like that, this is probably not so impressing. But if you have had to implement systems with visitors and all that, you might enjoy features like multiple inheritance even more. So that would be a practical situation where you would actually want to have something like multiple dispatching. Okay, is there any questions? Because I think that's the end of the tutorial sheet. Yeah, so we can finish, I would say.